I remember a few years ago I heard the sentence the Balkan route is closed, but still people arriving there and trying and manage also to enter the European Union. How would you describe the current situation of refugees at the Balkans?
It's an interesting phrase, this closing of the route, because obviously we see large scale movement of people through the Balkan states. And the route is certainly not closed, despite the fact that governments are, and the European Union is trying to enforce a very hard external border, but it is still permeable. People are getting through, but they're getting through after experiencing very severe traumatic and violent repression from the police and from the really dire or the very poor humanitarian situation here. So the phrase closed route doesn't really tell you enough about what's going on here, but it shows perhaps in a simplistic sense the fact that there are large bottlenecks or areas where people are trapped up against the external EU border, for instance in the west of Bosnia, still in Serbia as well, since the kind of construction of this militarized border zone between Serbia and Hungary. There's still groups that are stuck there for many, many years now. And again, connecting up to the large population in Greece and the kind of the entry point of this route. There's still thousands of people on the move, young men, families, women and children who are trying to transit this area to reach safety, to claim asylum, to access some kind of future in Europe. And we are seeing again this effort to stop people, and that's come out through the form of pushbacks.
You already mentioned pushbacks, and the police, especially in Croatia, is reported to use pushbacks to hinder refugees of entering the European Union. Pushbacks, that means that they are arrested after entering the European Union and forced out of the country. It is reported that there is often violence used. What is going on the border between Croatia and Bosnia?
Well, I mean, on this border, there is a systematized process. It's hard to call it a process because that suggests it's somehow formal and part of a legislative or a legal framework. But this is a completely illegal process being carried out where groups of people on the move, once they enter into the Croatian territory, are being caught by the police, often beaten and brutalized, and then removed directly across the border with varying access to some kind of charade of procedure, whether that's fingerprinting or photo taking, signing of documents. There are some attempts to conceal this within a legislative framework of a legal removal, but on a daily basis, people are being pushed back. Even Croatia produced their own statistics, which would suggest that there were just under 50 people a day being pushed back across that border. They obviously state that they're carrying out border protection as the Schengen border code, which they're looking to soon join, would suggest this is the correct way to protect an external border. But obviously what we're recording is a high level of systematized violence. Just in the cases we've seen recently as well, there was a man shot in Rijeka, or in the north of Croatia, and taken to the hospital in Rijeka. And over the course of 2019, we've recorded 770 people who've been victim of threatening with guns or the use of gunfire within pushbacks. We see people being beaten with batons and sticks. So during a pushback, there's a kind of common arc. I mean, they all have their specifics, each incident. Varying on the group size, where the people have been caught, which police division are involved, but generally at the point where they are brought to the border, they are stripped often to their underwear and having their shoes removed and trousers, tops and t-shirts, and that will be then burnt in a fire. So often when they're being driven by police forces as they are arriving at a section of the green border, so woodland or countryside between Bosnia and Croatia, and there is already a large fire lit, and then their shoes and all their personal items are thrown into that. And it works on a double kind of way. It's a psychological method to just show people, to deter them that, we're going to destroy all your stuff, don't come back. But it also obviously really makes it difficult for people to move, and they're having to walk perhaps 30 kilometers in Bosnia to get back to shelter afterwards. So obviously the damage to their feet and everything like that, and the cost of having to buy shoes again is a big factor. Obviously within that, all those violent practices are fundamentally violating people's human rights, but within the context of specific things like asylum access, this is incredibly unlawful, and also in terms of collective expulsion under the European Convention of Human Rights, it is illegal to remove people en masse without giving them individual processing. And that is really also at the core of what's going on here. We're seeing a violent attempt to remove groups en masse and to deter them, to use these tactics to stop people coming and put fear into their minds in terms of how they will be treated in Europe.
The pushbacks, they're happening mainly in member states of the European Union when people try to enter the European Union. But what's happening on the other side of the border? People are stuck in Bosnia and Serbia, for example, and the authorities there, they are becoming more repressive towards the refugees. How does repression or how the situation of refugees look like in Bosnia and Serbia?
It's again worsening, and I suppose from an organisation such as ourselves that are recording on mainly pushbacks from EU's external borders, we can really see how the impact of the European Union's borderisation programme is outsourcing violence to these non-member states. So in the case of Bosnia specifically, in the last 2 months, there's been a real rise in local police violence, where they are displacing people from town centres, especially in the west of Bosnia, in the towns of Bihać and Velika Kladuša. Police are removing people from the town or the kind of urban limits to these improvised camps, especially Pučak, which has been, quite prominent in the German press. So there's an interplay between local government and international organisations who, you know, for instance, IOM, who are running the camp system here effectively, but have set up very poorly resourced and I would say unsafe camps, especially for minors. There's most of the recording work we've done has been with plus 30% minors. So it's a big issue in this area, and you can see that. The way that the European Union has built the humanitarian package, or the way they're working here, has caused a lot of the problems that local police forces and authorities are now responding in a reactionary sense. And in Serbia, again, the same. The last 2 months, there's been lots of raids on the squats in the west and north, where informal communities were using abandoned buildings and places to stay outside of the camps. And now the police are starting to crack down on those. But it's really, I suppose, a symptom of a wider problem where these people have been marooned or sort of stuck in these areas, and local, and it's also fair to say quite authoritarian approaches from the government are really just a knock-on effect of these non-member states having to swallow their situation as effectively open prisons or open detention centres for people on the move.
And how refugees adapt to this new tightened situation?
The thing is, people are still coming, even in the winter, where the movement slows slightly and more people are likely to stay around Greece or in the slightly towards the south of the route. People are still remaining here. They don't really have an option to go back. And again, I mentioned Greece. The situation there is also really at crisis point. We're seeing a lot of internal pushbacks and also pushbacks from far north of the territory back into Turkey. The situation on the islands is awful there. So across the route, there's a real tightening of conditions. And unfortunately, people are just suffering from that. They have no option than to keep moving, than to keep trying. But obviously, in these kind of weather conditions that you get growing into November and December, the options for people to move on foot, which is like the primary way people stay mobile on this route, really, really narrow. So people are forced to take more dangerous risks to try and move, taking, boarding trucks or trying more dangerous attempts to cross the border. So, you know, it's putting people at risk, the fact that they are also still sleeping outside in one of these large camps in Bosnia, with the temperatures soon hitting sub-zero, and the fact that there isn't proper sanitation. We won't know the real death toll of people from that camp, because a lot of them who are trying the game will be, you know, potentially putting their lives at risk as they enter these Croatian forests, you know, with very weak physical conditions and the sickness that is obviously comes with living in really substandard conditions for so many months.
The authorities in Bosnia and Serbia, they are, as you told, not providing for the basic human needs of the refugees stuck in these countries. But in the meanwhile, they also try to disturb the work of humanitarian aid of NGOs. What kind of repressions do NGOs face in Bosnia and Serbia?
We see, I suppose, a regular attempt to inhibit or to get in the way of especially small-scale organizations carrying out like basic distributions of items such as blankets and food and things like that, especially those organizations that are working with informal communities. Because I suppose when we look at the Balkan route, we see a growing trend of formalization and attempts by government and intergovernmental or NGO groups to monopolize very, what I would say, substandard, but very large camps, which everyone, I suppose, all transit populations should be pushed into and should be treated within this system. So any attempts by a lot of the smaller groups, which are often combinations of international and local activists, to work with people in squats and camping outside or in various different places, is often seen as a threat by the police. So there's efforts by the police to stop people, especially by running checks on their vehicles, by taking passports or documents, by trying to push out groups that are working perhaps on tourist visas rather than volunteer visas. And again, the impact is also mainly felt on the people in transit. There's attempts to target these support groups, but also the police have been targeting the informal groups, which we, I suppose, are trying to support. So recently there was a massive clearance in the town of Šid, in Serbia, where the police removed around 100 people from one large squat and then took some of the equipment from one of these local support organizations. So yeah, you see on a regular basis this occurring, and the use of kind of the Service for Foreign Affairs in both countries intervening to see who is there to support. But I think it connects up to this wider issue of the monopoly of large NGOs who are contracted by the European Union, such as International Organization for Migration, who are seen as the solution for this, whether, you know, their practice is very questionable. But on the ground, the knock-on effect is that these smaller groups really receive a lot of repression.